the sixth chapter of Zechariah, the seventh vision, verse 1-8. And I turned and lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there came four chariots out from between two mountains, and the mountains were mountains of brass. In the first chariot were red horses, and in the second chariot black horses, and in the third chariot white horses, and in the fourth chariot grizzled and bay horses. Then I turned and said unto the angel that talked with me, What are these, my lord? And the angel answered and said unto me, These are the four spirits of the heavens, which go forth from standing before the Lord of all the earth. The black horses, which are therein, go forth into the north country, and the white go forth after them, and the grizzled go forth toward the south country. And the bay went forth and sought to go, that they might walk to and fro through the earth. And he said, Get you hence, walk to and fro through the earth. So they walked to and fro through the earth. Then cried he upon me and spake unto me, saying, Behold, these that go toward the north country have quieted my spirit in the north country. Now, brothers and sisters, this is, of course, as we have said, vision number 7. In the last address, we considered the sixth vision. And six, as most of you would know, is the number of man. Man, always apostate, always rebellious. Man, left to himself, as Brother Chalmers wrote in Help Us Israel, is more ferocious than the fiercest beast of prey. But now, what a difference. Now we behold Yah's work suddenly presented in the earth. Yahweh's great and glorious work. In this vision, we have to contrast the present religious and social world with the future glory that is revealed in this chapter. Man. How can he that is born of a woman be clean? In any sense of the term. Left to himself, as at the moment, he returns to his former unenlightened foolishness and arrogance, inevitably. Just like the world today. The world today has cast off the Bible. It has a certain moral sense about it. But examine the moral sense. Examine the motive. Examine the character. And you will see that they are animated by morals that are of the flesh. Where are the Bible principles? Where are the Bible principles of resist not evil and worship of Yahweh? They do not exist. Yes, how can a man born of a woman be clean? Even those who were once enlightened, when they go away from the Bible, go away from the Bible principles, they go back to their former state of ignorance, which the Master himself said returns to them to 7 times more wicked than they were before. Look at the situation we find in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5 and 12. And in considering this chapter in Genesis, we must realize that this is only 1.5 millennium after the creation. And what do we find here? We find sons of God who once held the truth, corrupting Yahweh's way upon the earth. Verse 5. And Yahweh saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Verse 12. And Elohim looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted his way, Yahweh's way, upon the earth. All flesh. Sons of men saw, the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they went over to them in droves, till there was only 8 persons that were left, that kept themselves separate. So then in this chapter, this is the picture that we have before us. Zechariah is suddenly confronted with the last vision, the vision of the manifestation of the power of El. He is called upon to look back and to look up. To look up to the new heavens and the new earth of Yahweh's planting. And to look back in time. Back to the seventh trumpet. Back, not now, to his time of probation. His time of sweat and labor and filthiness. The time of his filthy garments, but now back to the resurrection. He is standing in the kingdom, and he is looking back, and he's looking back to the time when the saints are resurrected, to his resurrection and glory and immortality, a glory which comprehends the works of Armageddon. Here, Zechariah is a representative man, just like Daniel and John found themselves to be. He focuses on the two visions. His eyes focus on two mountains. Mountains of brass. Mountains of flesh, not individual flesh, but mountains of kingdoms of men, kingdoms of flesh. Two mountains that were antagonistic to each other, giant forces, Gog and Britain with their respective confederacies face each other. They face each other, brothers and sisters, for the final conflict, the final issues to be decided between them. All nations are gathered against Jerusalem, Britain and all as well. Britain is there not because of her interests in the Jewish people, but because of her political interests, which will be threatened at that time. Nevertheless, she will be saved nationally, because she throws in her lot after this with the Arabian power. The power that has recently been created, when those stand, the anointed ones have stood before the Eden of all the earth in Sinai. Mountains of brass that have overwhelmed Jerusalem. Mountains in Scripture denote great destructive powers. It's a scene in Jeremiah chapter 51, if you turn that passage up, brothers and sisters. It's Jeremiah 51 speaks of the power of the north, which, as we speak, is about to fall on the mountains of Israel. Now, in the vision, Russia is coupled with the Roman Catholic power. Now, if you look at verse 24 and 25 of this chapter, and I will render unto Babylon and to all the inhabitants of Chaldea all their evil that they have done in Zion, in your sight, saith Yahweh. Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith Yahweh, which destroyed all the earth. And I will stretch out my hand upon thee, and roll thee down from the rocks, and will make thee a burnt mountain. The mountains on this occasion of our vision have overwhelmed Jerusalem. The shadows are across Jerusalem. Jerusalem is in the center of these two mountains, and they've overwhelmed them. But the prophecy of this is that I will make thee a burnt mountain and will roll thee down, that is, to destruction. This proves, of course, that it is a prophecy of the latter days. This vision that we are considering shows us also the tremendous power that Israel will be in the time of Armageddon. Now, we don't always consider this. In fact, we very rarely consider Israel's part in the time of Armageddon. But if you look at verse 20 to 23 of this chapter, thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, O Israel. With thee will I break in pieces the nations. With thee will I destroy kingdoms. Israel will conquer the world with the saints as the officers of the Israeli hosts. And with thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider, and with thee will I break in pieces the chariot and his rider. With thee also will I break in pieces the man and woman. With thee will I break in pieces the old and young. With thee will I break in pieces the young man and the maid. I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flock. The shepherd and his flock, the false shepherd, as we are later to consider in Zechariah, is none other but the Roman Catholic shepherd of apostasy. And his flock is going to be dashed in pieces when you consider the 16th chapter of Revelation and realize this. With thee will I break in pieces the husbandman, his yoke of oxen. With thee will I break in pieces captains and rulers, and I will render unto Babylon. With thee. 10 times in these verses does Yahweh stress, with thee I will do all these things. We have to understand that though the saints will officer the Israeli host, while the saints will give them a protective shield whereby they will not be hurt, when every one of them will be a Samson, and the officers of the Israeli host, though immortal, will appear as mortal men. And it is with Israel that the world is conquered. We have to realize this, because we sometimes hear and sometimes speak ourselves of the fact that the saints will conquer the world. Well, they will, but with Israel. Now, this is to be stressed in this address for a particular reason, which we will see in a moment. Now, in Revelation chapter 8 and verse 8, there is consideration here given to the great power of the Vandals. Now, the modern hooligans, of course, are called Vandals because they destroy everything that they touch. And the word comes, as few people have realized, from the Vandal race that wrought such havoc in the sea nations of the Roman Empire. And yet they are termed a great mountain. Look at verse 8. Second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third part of sea became blood. Now, the mountain burning with fire of the Vandals was a destroying mountain that destroyed others. Whereas we have realized in Jeremiah 51 that it is the time when Yahweh will take this burnt mountain, because he will burn it up and roll it down to destruction. So it will itself be destroyed. But here we see how great that destroying nature of this mountain really was. Now, suddenly, while Zechariah was looking, four chariots appeared on the scene. They were not ordinary chariots. They were, in fact, cherubic. They were the four horses and four chariots of the cherubim. They appear as if by magic, unexpected. The mountains have done their fell work. Suddenly, from nowhere, as it were, came these four chariots. They say, where do they come from? We know where they're going to come from, brothers and sisters, and we could tell them. We're anxious to tell them. We're anxious to tell the people of the world now. Look, believe the gospel and be baptized, and you will be a kingly priest upon this earth. You will have the power and glory to lead the Israeli hosts against the forces of the world. But they do not believe. They are, these chariots, of course, the cherubim. Now, the meaning of the word cherubim is unclear, but it appears to have a twofold significance. One is that it denotes the held fast ones. They're in my Father's hand, and none can pluck them out of my Father's hand. And the secondary is, they are the ones holding fast, that is, tenaciously to the truth. Now, in chapter 4 of Zechariah, we have seen already that the four spirits, the four anointed ones, stand before the Adon, the Lord of all the earth. Now, that word, name Adon, is here in this sixth chapter again. But now they are not standing. In chapter 4 they are quiescent, as it were. They were the olive trees, the anointed ones, which stood in priestly office, as it were. But now they go forth in battle array. They proceed as the four spirits of the heavens. In Habakkuk chapter 3 and verse 4, we read, verse 3 for connection, Eloah came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. And his brightness was as the light, and he had horns coming out of his hand, and there was the powers of Olam, the powers of Olam. Now this is repeated almost word for word in Deuteronomy chapter 33 and verse 26 on. There is none like the ale of Yeshurun, who rideth heavens, I'm reading out Brother Thomas's translation of this, by the way, who rideth heavens, that's the saints, in thy help, Israel's help, and in his majesty on clouds of faithful witnesses. The Elohim of olden time is thy refuge, and underneath the powers of Olam, the powers of Olam. These powers of Olam then shows, these two chapters show us, don't they, that they are destructive powers sent forth to destroy man's power on the earth. The two mountains in this chapter are two huge opposing armies. From between them comes the chariots of Yahweh, the cherubim of Yahweh, which is always warlike, always destructive. Their mission is never a peaceful one. The picture is a picture of complete carnage. When you think about the character and work of the mountains and the character and work of the cherubim, it's just the same. This is, brothers and sisters, this is Armageddon. This is not man's view of Armageddon. We remember some time ago, the Archbishop of Canterbury saying that they had to be careful about what was going on in Africa and the world today, that they might avoid Armageddon. Their idea of Armageddon is the world against Satan, and that Yahweh is against Armageddon, and that he gives the forces of orthodoxy to avoid it. This is nonsense, of course, because Armageddon is God's army against the world. Nearly always, of course, man's view of these great battles pictured in the Bible is totally wrong. The purpose of Armageddon is twofold. First, it is the manifestation of Yahweh and his saints for the deliverance of Israel. Secondly, that the rubbish of man's government may be swept away and the kingdom of God put in its place. The battle against Gog is the first major battle of the Rainbowed Angel, and it is the last one that Gog fights. It is leading to the last one that the Roman Catholic world fights, and it is sure that the world itself is about to disappear. Now, this great mountain, described as the mountain in the north, is found to be in Ezekiel 38. The picture in this chapter is one of the king of the north coming against Israel and the deliverance of Israel by Yahweh manifestation. Verse 11, thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls, having neither bars nor gates, to take a spoil, to take a prey, and so on. Now in verse 10 it says here, towards the end of the verse, things come into thy mind, and thou shalt think, conceive a mischievous purpose, margin. Conceive a mischievous purpose while he's in Egypt. I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. This is, of course, his fatal mistake. So the cherubim going towards the north mountain, the north country mountain as it were, defeats the power of Russia. In the 19th chapter of Isaiah, the other horse goes down into Egypt, into the south. 19th chapter of Isaiah, verse 1, the burden of Egypt. Behold, Yahweh rideth upon a bright cloud. Brother Thomas's translation, a bright cloud. Compare this with the 26th chapter of Isaiah, thy dew is as the dew of lights. Each saint is a dewdrop, and Yahweh rides this cloud of faithful one down into Egypt, represented in our chapter as the great chariot of Yahweh's wrath into Egypt. Egypt is defeated, and the Jews there are delivered, and further work takes place. And this further work is in verse 7 of our chapter. And it says, they desired to go to and fro through the earth. Now two, therefore, are the countries immediately adjacent to Israel, and that is the countries of Arabia. And the fro is, of course, across the Philistine territory, Gaza as it is now known, and into the west. It's into the western countries. Now, it is the Jews, of course, that defeat the Roman Catholic power. So the defeat of Russia, the invasion of the south, the deliverance of the Jews that are there, is all in this picture that we have here. Now I'd like to go back to Isaiah chapter 19 for a moment. Isaiah chapter 19, and this time, instead of verse 1, we'll have, let me see, verse 16 and particularly verse 20. In that day shall Egypt be like unto women, and he shall be afraid and fear because of the shaking of the hand of Yahweh hosts, which he shaketh over it. Verse 20. And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto Yahweh hosts in the land of Egypt. For they, the Jews that are there, shall cry unto Yahweh because of the oppressors, and he shall send them a saviour and a strong one, and shall deliver them. He shall deliver them. Although in this chapter under discussion, the sixth chapter of Zechariah, speaks of the red horse coming into prominence first of all, it is not first in the work. In fact, it is last in the work. Now, you have a look now again at verse 2. In the first chariot were red horses, the second chariot black horses. So although the red horse comes into prominence first, it is the other three horses that have the prominence in their work. There is a very special reason for this, of course. It is only after the black and the white and the patchy red take their toll, as it were, that suddenly the red horse comes into prominence. Now, why red? Red in the scripture denotes war. 19th chapter of Revelation is a very special chapter because it tells us that the horse here is white. It simply means, of course, that though red in commission, it is white in character. We read in verse 14, and the bodyguards which were in the heaven in Jerusalem followed him, that is the rider upon the white horse, righteousness in verse 11, upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. Now when the Spirit wishes to speak about the red horse in this chapter, it doesn't denote horses at all. It would be out of character, as it were. It denotes fowls. Now verse 7 says, and I saw an angel, Dr. Thomas's translation I'm using all the time, I saw an angel which had stood in the sun, in the 12th chapter, of course, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the fowls that fly in mid-heaven, in Jerusalem, come and gather yourselves together unto the supper of the great ale, that ye may eat the flesh of kings, and so forth. So we have here the white horse of righteousness. My people shall be all righteous in that day. And you got the red horse in commission as total war, as denoting total war. Israel, of course, has to be made righteous before they become the red horse. So in Joel chapter 2, we have how this is accomplished. Verse 21. And I will remove far off from you the northern army, and will drive him into a land barren and desolate, with his face towards the east sea, and his hind part towards the utmost sea. And his stink shall come up, and his ill savour shall come up, because he hath done great things. They shall not be buried, not for 7 months, that is, as the 39th chapter of Ezekiel tells us. Fear not, O land. Be glad and rejoice, for Yahweh will do great things. Now then, verse 30. And I will show wonders in the heavens, the political heavens, and in the earth among the people, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. This is Yahweh's work among the nations. And he says, the sun shall be turned into darkness, that is, the great imperial powers of the world. Man's power, in the singular, will experience total darkness, and the moon, ecclesiastical moon, the religious order of the day, into blood. Not darkness, but blood. Now we have the red horse work among them, and this denotes bloodshed on a massive scale before the great and terrible day of Yahweh come. And it shall come to pass, now this is speaking again of the conversion of Israel, and again Dr. Thomas's translation, shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of Yahweh shall be delivered. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as Yahweh said, and among the remnant, those who call upon the name of Yahweh. They become Yahweh's people. It is then that they become the soldiers of the rainbowed angel. Now, in Revelation chapter 10, we have this rainbowed angel pictured for us. Now, in verse 1, I saw an angel, a mighty angel, descending out of the heaven, clothed with a cloud, a rainbow was upon his head, his face as it were the sun, his feet as pillars of fire. Brother Thomas refers to this as pillars of fire. When he strides through Europe, everything is burned up. And the little book, therefore, which we will deal with a little later on, is the battle plans, of course, of the saints at this time. Now, these pillars of fire, if you turn up Malachi chapter 4, you will see who are the feet of the rainbowed angel. Malachi chapter 4, and for brevity, verse 1 and 3. Behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly shall be stubble, and the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith Yahweh host, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. Verse 2, the conversion of Israel. And to you that are prepared to fear my name, among the remnant, those that will call upon the name of Yahweh, will the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his beams. And ye Israel shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. And ye Israel will tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet. The Jews are the feet of the rainbowed angel. Now there are many figures employed in the scriptures, especially in the Old Testament, to show the essential and important position the Jews occupy in Armageddon. First, we have the Judah bow, later to be filled with the Ephraim arrow. We'll have a look at that in a moment. But interesting to notice the work of the Jews. They may augment the slain, as it were, in the time of Gog, as Brother Thomas says, but their work is with Roman Catholicism and the rest of the world. Now then, where we want to go now is Zechariah chapter 10. Zechariah chapter 10. Again, we have to be brief. Verse 3. Mine anger was against the shepherds, the Roman Catholic shepherds that lead the people astray, and I punished the goats, the goat nations. For Yahweh host hath visited his flock, the house of Judah, and made them as his goodly horse in the battle. He rides the goodly horse. The charioteer drives the chariot with red horses, which is Judah, in the initial phase of Armageddon against the Roman Catholic nations after they have defeated the Arabs round about, because they're going to beat down the Arab nations round about. Now in the 19th chapter of Revelation, this coming forth out of the heaven is pictured here for us. Now, it says in verse 1, after these things, now that these things are revealed in chapter 19, it is the total destruction of the Roman Catholic hordes and all the kings of the earth with them. After these things, I heard a great voice of much people in the heaven, Jerusalem, saying, praise be to Yah, salvation and glory and honor and power unto Yahweh our Elohim. For true and righteous are his judgments, for he has judged the great whore which did corrupt the earth with her whoredom, and hath avenged the blood of his servants at her hand. And again they said, Alleluia, praise to Yah. And her smoke, Roman Catholicism, her smoke rose up unto the aeons of the aeons. Now we're talking about many figures used to describe the importance that the Israelitish nation will assume in the battles of Armageddon. We've noticed in Revelation 19 the fowls that gather together. In Zechariah chapter 9, only briefly dealing with them, because of course we've got to come back to it again. When, verse 13, when I have bent Judah for me, filled the bow with Ephraim, the 10 tribes, raised up thy sons, O Zion, the converted ones, against thy sons, O Greece, and made thee, the completed 12 tribes who are converted, as the sword of a mighty man, even the rainbow angel. And Yahweh shall be seen over them, and his arrow, Ephraim, 10 tribes, shall go forth as the lightning, and Adonai Yahweh shall blow with a trumpet, and shall go forth with whirlwinds of the south. And Yahweh host shall defend them, and they shall devour and subdue with sling stones, and they shall drink and make a noise as through wine, and they shall be filled with bowls and as the corners of the altar. And Yahweh their Elohim shall save them in that day as the flock of his people. For they shall be as the stones of a crown lifted up as an ensign upon his land. For how great is his goodness. It shows, doesn't it, the kind of role they have in that war. In the war they become, as Jeremiah 51 says, his battle axe and weapons of war. We'll have to go to that chapter, 51st chapter of Jeremiah. Isaiah chapter 20, verse 19, Jacob, thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, with thee will I destroy kingdoms, with thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider. Now there's 10 with these in these few verses, 10, which is the number of ordinal perfection. With thee, stressed over and over again, take note, brothers and sisters, of this. With thee, Israel, Jacob. With thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider. With thee will I break in pieces the chariot and his rider. With thee will I break in pieces man and woman. With thee will I break in pieces old and young. With thee will I break in pieces young man, maid. I will break in pieces with thee the shepherd, false shepherd, and his flock, Roman Catholicism, the Roman Catholicists in all the world. And with thee will I break in pieces the husbandman, his yoke of oxen, the not only the political but the social fabric of the world. Break in pieces the captains and rulers that lead the armies against Christ. With thee will I, and I will render unto Babylon and unto all the inhabitants of Chaldea all their evil that they've done in Zion, in your sight, saith Yahweh. Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain. Now notice now, instead of the mountain of Babylon rolling down in its destruction, and burning out and crushing Israel. Now it is the mountains are leveled by Israel. I will render unto thee Babylon. Verse 25, I'm against thee, O destroying mountain, saith Yahweh, which destroyeth the earth. I will stretch out my hand upon thee, and will roll thee down from the rocks, and make thee a burnt mountain. With thee, the 10 tribes of Israel. We have a general description of this in Isaiah chapter 41. Verse 15 and 16. Behold, I'll make thee, Israel. Notice verse 14, Jacob, men of Israel. Behold, I will make thee a new sharp threshing instrument, having teeth. Thou shalt thresh the mountains and beat them small. Thresh the mountains and beat them small, and shall make the hills as chaff. Thou shalt fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them. And thou shalt rejoice in Yahweh, and shalt glory in the Holy One of Israel. They are now converted. This is the threshing instrument that Israel then becomes. What a glorious picture, brothers and sisters. Why are we stressing it? We are stressing it, brothers and sisters, because it is not believed and preached among us. I'm talking about the household of faith. I'm not talking about any particular fellowship. This part that Israel plays is most important because they are the subjects of the kingdom of God. Look at this, men and sisters. Look at this list that we now put before you. Israel is as a sheaf, or becomes like a sheaf of fire in the wood. Now you know what damage that can do in a forest. The sling stones of a mighty man, like David's 5 stones out of the brook, one of them couldn't miss and kill the giant. A sharp stone, a well-chosen stone, brothers and sisters, that hits a man in the right place is as good as a bullet any day. As a devouring lion, as the army of Yahweh, Zechariah 9:14, as we've seen, as the fowls tearing the flesh of the kings of the earth, Revelation 19:17, as the lightning that strikes men dead, Zechariah 9:14, as the bow later to be filled with the Ephraim arrow, Zechariah 9:3. We have a general description of all this in Micah chapter 5 and verse 15. In this chapter, as you say, this general picture that we now present to you, there's a most powerful couple of verses here in relation to this. First of all, verse 15, and I will execute vengeance in anger and fury upon the heathen, such as they have not heard, as they have never heard. And by what means? Verse 8 to 9, and the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles in the midst of many people, as a lion among the beasts of the forest, as a young lion among the flocks of sheep, who if he go through both treadeth down, teareth in pieces, and none can deliver. Thine hand shall be lifted up upon thine adversaries, and all thine enemies shall be cut off. It shall come to pass in that day that Yah will cut off thy horses out of the midst of thee, and I will destroy thy chariots, the arm of flesh that Israel now rests upon. So now we have to bring this picture together. How can we do that? We see the huge armies of east and west drawn up in battle array. They're not allowed to be joined in battle, as Brother Thomas said, because the glory is Yahweh's glory, not man's. They are drawn up, brothers and sisters, to contest the dominion of the world. The dominion of the world. We must remember that Palestine is the navel of the world. before a power can conquer the world, it has to conquer Palestine. We must think about that. Rommel knew this very well, Hitler knew this very well, and his campaigns in the Middle East were therefore designed for this. Even before the war began, they were laying armaments in Egypt to accomplish this. It is the greatest force brought together, the force of man, that the world has ever seen. It's a force inspiring great awe. It's a force that has never been dreamt of, brothers and sisters. Until it is drawn up, men will realize. But there's another force present that they know nothing of. It is the force of the rainbow angel. And it's because of that force that all man's power will evaporate, disappear, like mist in the morning sunshine. In Daniel chapter 11, in that well-known chapter, we have the powers drawn up there, the power of the north, and it says here, Daniel chapter 11 verse 45, "And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and none to help him." Why? Because verse 1 of chapter 12 says, "And at that time shall Michael, one who is like hail, stand up, the great commander," the word princess commander, "which standeth for the children of thy people, the Jews, to deliver them. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since man was upon the earth so great." Yes, we can see why it is the last battle that Roman Catholicism, coupled with Gog, Russia, fights. It is the last battle, the last major battle, and the first one of Armageddon. It is the first battle of the Rainbow Angel, the first major battle of the Rainbow Angel. It's certainly not the last one. Human nature then, human power, is revealed as the great mountains of pride and arrogance. They will become a burnt mountains brought down to destruction. In the 64th chapter of Isaiah, this is described. 64th chapter of Isaiah, and verse 1 to 3. "Oh, that thou wouldest rend the heavens," is the cry of the prophet, "that thou wouldest come down, that the mountains might flow down. You make a great leveling of all the pride of man at thy presence. As when the melting fire burneth, the fire causeth the waters to boil, to make thy name known to thine adversaries, that the nations may tremble at thy presence. When thou didst terrible things, which we look not for, thou camest down, the mountains flowed down at thy presence. For since the beginning of the world, men have not heard nor perceived these things." And these are the things, we often hear these words, brothers and sisters, that men have not heard nor perceived by the ear, neither hath the eye seen, O Elohim, beside thee, what he hath prepared for him that waiteth for him. What he has prepared for them that waiteth for him, the great reward, is the reward of Armageddon. The Yahweh Spirit has now been clothed with a great cloud of witnesses. All these, therefore, compose the Man of One, the angel, the giant, striding through the age in the time to come. These are not unfaithful. These are the ones that have been salted with fire of tribulation, brothers and sisters. And they have already stood before the Son of Man. In Revelation chapter 14, we go back prior now to the first battle of Armageddon. We go all the way back now to the Sinai, receiving immortality, coming forth in power and great glory, defeating the world and standing in their inheritance. They don't do that until the inheritance is secured. This is why it says in the fifth chapter of Revelation that they sang a new song before the throne, Thou hast made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on earth. They don't receive their inheritance until the earth is conquered. And so in the 14th chapter of Revelation then, I looked and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having had his father's name written in their foreheads. There, it was written there, the father's name, in a previous existence, a time of probation, stress, and worry, and strife, and persecution. But now they stand in their inheritance on Mount Zion. The world is conquered. They stand in their lot. Daniel was told this in this 12th chapter, 9th verse. Go thy way, Daniel. Thou shalt sleep in the dust of the earth and stand in thy lot, in thine inheritance at the end of the days. Now Jesus promised his disciples in the 3rd chapter of Revelation, I believe it's verse 21, those that overcome will sit with me in my throne, the throne of glory, even as I also overcame, and I'm set down with my Father in his throne. They have believed, brothers and sisters, not only the gospel in their time of strife, but the whole of the Word of God. The Bible is the inspired Word of God. Some do not believe. Paul in his day said, there are some who believe not. Some believe not the whole gospel, the whole truth, only part of it. Some believe part of Armageddon, or perhaps not at all. Those who stand in that day, brothers and sisters, and have composed the cherubim of glory, those who stood in Sinai waiting for the commission to go forth, receiving the battle plans of the saints, have been separated. No misbelievers there, no apostates, no worthless people, no reprobates, no spiritual murderers of his saints, no dross. They're gone as the mist of the morning sun. These have lifted up their wings as the cherubim, and they have gone forth. His going forth is described in chapter 1, 8 and 10 of Ezekiel. We'd like to go back quite briefly now to the first chapter of Ezekiel to show this power. Ezekiel chapter 1. Here we are. Chapter 1 and verse 1 to 6. It came to pass in the 30th year, 4th month, 5th day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river of Kebar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of Elohim, mighty ones, in the 5th day of the month, which was the 5th year of the king Jehoiakim's captivity. The word of Yahweh came expressly unto Ezekiel, the priest, son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans. I looked, verse 4, behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud, fire enfolding itself, catching itself. A brightness was about it, out of the midst thereof as the colour of amber. Verse 5, also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of all living creatures. This was their appearance. They had the likeness of man. Every one had four faces. Every one had four wings, four faces, four wings. Verse 14, the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. And verse 24, and when they went, I heard the noise of their wings like the noise of great waters, as the voice of Shaddai, the voice of speech, as the noise of an host. When they stood, they let down their wings. There was a voice from the firmament that was over their heads, a noise of a rushing of mighty waters, the going forth, as it were, of the faithful ones. Yes, only the faithful ones will remain after the purging process is complete. Paul's description of them in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, for instance, is very powerful. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Verse 3 and 4. Sorry, it's verse 12 to 15. Now if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, or wood, hay, and stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is, if any man's work abide. In the third chapter of Malachi's prophecy, we have the manifestation of the faithful ones, the jewels that are made up in those days. These have come out of great tribulation and come through the fire of judgment. Now this explanation of these going forth is given in two wonderful paragraphs in the third volume of Eureka. It's the Logos edition, the Brown edition, volume 3, page 186, second paragraph, and 187, which I would like to quote, because the words are so wonderful, we couldn't put them ourselves better. Firstly then, page 186, Brother Thomas is describing the saints in their time of rest with their master in Sinai, contemplating the judgments to come. And he says in this paragraph, now reader, he says, now reader, he writes, ascend with me into the mount of the Elohim, and from the top of the rocks look into the open spaces of this elevated region of the peninsula. What seest thou outspread before thee? What but the goodly tents and tabernacles of the holy nation, the chosen generation, the royal priesthood, the purchased people, the Israel of God. 1 Peter 2:9, Galatians 6:16. As the valleys are they spread forth, as gardens by the riverside, as the trees of lime aloes which Yahweh hath planted, as cedar trees beside the waters, whose king shall be higher than Agag, Gog, and his kingdom shall be exalted. Behold them abiding according to their tribes. Those tribes apocalyptically sealed in their foreheads with the seal of the deity. Chapter 7, 4-9. How beautiful are they in their encampment, who as the four living ones lie four square, and as broad as their length, being 144 cubits, which is the measure of a man, that is, of the angel, even of the rainbowed angel, Apocalypse 21, 16, 17, whose altitude is equal to his breadth, an altitude by which his relationship to the light, which no man can approach unto, is established and revealed. He says then, but why do they lie there in their encampment? What is their angelism? Why are they thus marshalled, looking forth as the morning, fair as the noon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners? Why have they been hastily transported thither in clouds? Why are they here in convention with the Lord in the aerial? Are they to remain there permanently encamped in the elevated region of the peninsula? No. And in page 187, the bottom half of the page, from the word but all things being prepared, he says, the quietude of the camp of Sinai is changed for the noise of great waters. The scene becomes tempestuous. When they stood inactive, they let down their wings, but judgment having been given to them, they extend their wings, and the noise thereof is the noise of a host marching against the foe. Habakkuk saw this angelic multitude, unity in full career, he says. This, brothers and sisters, is the very pivot of our faith. It is all our desire and will mean our salvation. Isaiah 30 speaks of the name of Yahweh burning with his anger. Isaiah writes in verse 27-28, "Behold, the name of Yahweh cometh from far," that is, from a far country, Luke 19, "burning with his anger, and the burden thereof is heavy. His lips are full of indignation, and his tongue as a devouring fire, and his breath as an overflowing stream shall reach to the midst of the neck to sift the nations with a sieve of vanity, and there shall be a bridle in the jaws of the people, causing them to err." Verse 31, "For through the voice of Yahweh shall the Assyrian, Gog, be beaten down, which smote with the rod." Verse 33, "For Tophet, Armageddon, is ordained of old. Yea, for the king, even Gog, it is prepared. He hath made it deep and large. The pile thereof is fire, and much wood. The breath of Yahweh shall, like a stream of brimstone, doth kindle it." We must not forget, brethren and sisters, this picture, because, as we have said, our salvation is bound up in it. What a time this will be. What a time of rest and consideration. The unspeakable privilege of being with the Master in Sinai before the cherubim raises up their wings and there is a great sound of mighty waters going forth to battle. The host of Yahweh, the chariots of Yahweh, going forth to battle. The battle plans are revealed, or rather stated, in the 10th chapter of Revelation and verse 3 and 4. They are contained in the seven thunders. And John was about to write, he was told, don't write them. They are the secret plans, brethren and sisters, of the battles of Armageddon. Plans which the Roman Catholics may on no account lay their hands on. But suddenly there is a noise in the camp. They lift up their wings. War ensues upon the world of the ungodly. Reports, of course, will come to the world of an invading force from the region of Sinai, beating down the enemy on the way, subduing the wild Arabs of Paran. But suddenly in the Middle East will come the confrontation, without them knowing where this force is coming from. The cherubim appears. Now, there are no riders on these chariots. Why? Now, Deuteronomy will tell us in the 33rd chapter, verse 26-29, and in Isaiah 19:1, that Yahweh is the charioteer. And again, in these passages, I'm quoting Dr. Thomas, "There is none like the ale of Yeshurun, riding heavens in thy Israel's help, and in his majesty on clouds of immortal saints. The eternal ale is thy refuge, and the eternal Elohim is thy refuge, and underneath the arms of Olam. And he shall thrust at the enemy from before thee, and shall say to Israel, destroy them, destroy them." And then it follows, "For the redeemed people," verse 29, "Happy art thou, O Israel, who is like unto thee, O people, saved by Yahweh, the shield of thy help, and who is the sword of thy majesty? And thine enemies shall be found liars unto thee, and thou shalt tread upon their high places, their places of power. And in Isaiah chapter 19 and verse 1, speaking now of the white horse, the bay, that is red on a white background, or white on a red background rather, the burden of Egypt, behold, Yahweh rideth upon a swift cloud, a bright cloud, a cloud of dew, Isaiah 26, and shall come into Egypt, and terrible destruction will ensue. Now then we ask, why are the horses differently coloured? Because colours denote character and work. Now we have noticed that the red horse is the first one mentioned in our chapter, and yet the last to be commissioned. Why? Well, because the red horse, being the tribes of Israel, has not been prepared previous to this. They have to be prepared by a terrible affliction, an affliction which is described in Zechariah chapter 13, verse 8 and 9. We read there, and it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith Yahweh, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, the third part shall be left therein, and I will bring the third part through the fire, will refine them as silver is refined, I will try them as gold is tried, and they shall call upon my name. I will hear them, I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, Yahweh, even Jesus, is my Elohim. Again, Dr. Thomas's translation. Now in the 110th Psalm, the effect of this tribulation is spoken quite clearly. Verse 2, Yahweh shall send the rod of thy strength out of Zion. Rule thou in the midst of thine enemies, a command to the great commander, Christ himself, with his saints. Thy people, Israel, shall be willing in the day of thine army, the saints, the bodyguards of the Mighty One, in the beauties of holiness, from the womb of the morning, thou hast the dew of thy youth, the resurrected saints. Yahweh has sworn, thou art a priest for all arm, the hidden period, after the order of Melchizedek. Thy people shall be willing in the day of thine army. They shall be made willing by the terrible tribulation that they will go through. The second horse is the black horse, which goes forth first. It is first in action. Now in the book of Job, black is shown there to be the result of stress. Now, a good description, of course, of total war is stress. And here it is, the black horse going forth for the destruction of the Russian forces, which does not end until they are completely scattered and subdued. And then it says, the white go forth after them into the north country, not with them, but after them. Now the white here, as we have seen, is the colour of leprosy, not righteousness. The work of this horse is to bring terrible suffering, leprosy, bringing famine, pestilence, and so forth. In Revelation chapter 6 and verse 5 and 6, you shall see that this horse brings famine, starvation, suffering, and we can see it, the concomitant of this in Africa at the present time. The inevitable suffering and starvation and plague which comes as a result of the stress of war. The fourth horse, which is third in action, is the grizzled bay. It's a horse of white patches on a red background. It's easy to see that this leprosy mixed with blood. Again, we have war and the result of that war in all the earth, but particularly in Egypt. This is described fully for us in Revelation chapter 16 as trouble, anguish, famine, starvation, earthquake, voices, thunders, in which the political and social fabric of the entire world will disappear. In the 14th chapter of Zechariah and verse 6 and 7, Brother Thomas's translation of this is that the saints that take part in Revelation, though they are the Yahweh spirit, they cloak themselves as if they appear to be mortal men. They appear to be this in Armageddon as officers of the Israeli force. Otherwise the nations would flee from them, of course, if they appeared as angels. And also, in the millennium, the people of the world will have to have faith in them, that they, beholding the immortals, they are, said Brother Thomas, the splendid ones drawing in. The nations will see the power of Yahweh and not the character as such. Our chapter describes the glory of Baal and the glorification of the Israel of Yahweh, the saints. They stand on Mount Sinai in the 14th chapter of Revelation, of course. They stand in their lot. They go forth to secure their inheritance, to become kings and priests on the earth. Fifth chapter of Revelation, we'll just quote it. Thou hast made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on earth. Is shall reign on earth. They don't reign, of course, in Sinai. They receive immortality. The later on, they reign over the entire earth as the kings of the earth and the priests of the nations. They stand in their inheritance after the vengeance is poured out upon the world. This is seen clearly in Revelation 14:1 and Revelation 19:1. Now, to return to the actual conflict. The black and the white and the red and white, or red on white, is the initial battles of Armageddon, in which the armies of this world in the country of Palestine is overcome and destroyed. But now the red horse is prepared, and the red horse is prepared to go. Not only prepared, but thy people shall be willing in the day of thine army. In the sixth chapter then of Zechariah again, and verse 7, and the bay, the strong, went forth and sought to go, that they might walk to and fro through the earth. And he said, get you hence, walk to and fro through the earth. So they walk to and fro through the earth. And then it says at the initial pouring out, thou hast quieted my spirit in the north country. Israel, Judah rather, is prepared. They go to Arabia and fro into Europe. They beat down the surrounding Arab nations, who have a perpetual hatred of the Jews. Do not be misled by Arafat and those Arabs who are now seeking peace with Israel. They will not get rid of their eternal hatred of their brethren. But they beat down those Arab nations, and then they invade the territories of the whore. Toward the west, they fly upon, as birds of prey, fly upon the children, the shoulders of the Philistines, on their way to the west. The Roman Catholics will have a taste of their own medicine, delivered to them directly by Israel with the saints as the captains of the forces. And they will render unto her, if you have a look at Revelation 18, verse 6, double unto her, double for all her sins. The result of this terrible affliction, if you could read some of the history of the terrible acts of the Roman Catholics against the witnesses, you will see how terrible this last judgment upon Roman Catholicism, the great whore, the false religion, the apostate religion in the earth, really will be. Second chapter of Daniel, of course, verse 44 to 45. They will break in pieces the image, and it will disappear by the like the morning mist. The saints take the Judah bow in their hand, in a truly figurative sense, and fills it eventually with the Ephraim, 10 tribes, the arrow, and they become the army of the mighty man, the tools, the armaments of the mighty man, and they wage war against the world and conquer the world. To the astonishment of the world, Israel will everywhere be victorious. Read Eureka for a true picture of this. You will not get a true picture of it anywhere else, only in Eureka. Contrast now then, finally, the four chariots with their horses and the two mountains of brass. Brass, flesh, hard, unyielding, not precious, unworkable, which denotes flesh, which is hard, cruel, unyielding, and idiotic. The heroes of Yah's manifestation will go forth to level those mountains. They are Yah's precious ones. Their glory will be immense, their power irresistible. At last, the day will come, the day of the saints. It will be glory through the Olam and beyond. Such pictures, brethren and sisters, fill the Old Testament. Do we read them? Is this the picture that we have from the Old Testament? Every way you look, you just completed Isaiah. Almost every chapter of Isaiah speaks of the second coming of Christ and the works of Armageddon. Now in this sixth chapter of Zechariah, there is in verse 8 a cry made, the last verse of our chapter. Then cried he upon me, and spake unto me, saying, Behold, these that go towards the north country have quieted my spirit. The word in the Hebrew is a shriek, a cry, a shriek of victory. They've quieted Yahweh's spirit. What a prospect. It is a prospect, brethren and sisters, in our particular time of tribulation and loneliness, of trying to hang on in this time of departure